This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody at TFMR. Guess what? It's Thursday. So guess what? That means it's time for a Thursday conversation. And I've got one of my favorites coming in this week. A guy we've had in before, and I think a very timely guest. I'm talking about Mickey Fulp, who many of you will recognize by the name Mercenary Geologist. You can find his work at goldgeologist.com, where Mickey posts his work and sends out a free email that I think everybody, if you're not already registered for this, you got to go there and make sure you're on the receiving end of this. We're going to talk about Mickey's ideas, where we're headed this year, and a number of other things. So it's a pleasure to have Mickey back. Mickey, my friend, thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for the opportunity once again, Craig. And let me also say that my website, goldgeologist.com, is what we publish the website banner under, but it's also easy to get there through mercenarygeologist.com.
Got it. And then let's start right here, because we're going to talk a lot about the miners, and I think everybody on the site knows that I think there's some fiat to be made there this year. But I just think your service is fantastic. So tell everybody what it is and how they, you know, where they register to receive it.
Well, I run a free sponsorship newsletter, so free to subscribers. We make our money with advertisers on the website. So all my stuff is free, but to get my newsletter on a timely basis, and most importantly, my stock picks on a timely basis, you need to be a free email subscriber. And we also run a very robust Twitter feed. We've got 51,500 plus Twitter followers, so very active on Twitter. And I write a lot about stock picks and commodities. I'm a bit of a talking head in commodities. Macroeconomics, like you, I'm a libertarian, so we've crossed paths at various libertarian conferences as speakers before. And basically whatever interests me at the time.
Well, all right. What interests me are the miners this year. How'd you like that segue there, Mixie?
That's a good one.
Dude, I am a professional. Anyway, I wanted to bring you in, like I said, because of the focus that I think we're going to have here at TFMR. If things go according to plan, my plan for this year is kind of more of the same. We knew that the U.S. economy couldn't stand higher interest rates, and so this idea that rates were going to rise in 2019 was ridiculous. And we know that the Fed has to monetize the debt because nobody else is there to buy it. And so all of this meant that gold and silver were going to rally last year, and they did, and the shares did as well. I think that continues this year, and I think at some point, maybe we got to break out above the 2016 highs in the GDX, the GDXJ, the HUI, whatever you want to follow. Maybe that's what gets the spigot on, but all of this is what I expect this year. I think for topic number one of this podcast, what do you expect this year when you look at it from a macro basis?
Well, from a macro basis, your points are well taken. We now have something on the order of $24 trillion in debt, and our Fed is buying back the bonds that the Treasury Department creates. So we're creating more and more money supply. Interest rates very low. All this very good for gold. We've seen a run up. It actually touched 1,600 at one point last week when the Iran U.S. geopolitical event had another a second event, I guess I should say, but it came off of that. It's sitting around 1550. It's building a very strong base, so I expect gold to be strong for macroeconomic reasons, and that filters down at least through to the other precious metals.
And we're seeing that as well. What do you think of this? Before we get to the other precious metals, what do you think of this idea that I have that so far the shares have been kind of a, you know, little show me Missouri thing, you know. I mean, kind of, you know, I fell for this in 2016. I'm not falling for it again, kind of thing. In the realm of the day traders, you know, you seem to spike at the open and then sell off through the day rather than like a flow of funds coming in all day long. Do you think there's a spot where, you know, hedge funds and other institutions and big money finally starts to look at the sector?
Well, you would hope so, but they got burned pretty hard in early fall of 2016. So certainly they've been cautious. We have not really seen the big money pour into the gold stocks, all the way from the miners down to the penny crapper juniors, which is where I play most of my game as my bailiwick. But certainly that should happen at some point. That said, you should never conflate the price of gold with gold stocks. Sometimes gold stocks, and bear in mind, these are all speculations. They're not investments. Sometimes the stocks will front run gold. Sometimes gold front runs the stocks. If you had told any of us, the talking heads and the mavens and the pundits and people somewhat on the sideline, a year ago or a year and a half ago, that we would be looking at a gold price stabilized above 1500 and that the gold miners and the explorers were still lag, we'd all look at you cross-eyed and tell you you were crazy. But that's exactly what happens. At some point, we would expect the miners and the explorers to catch up. When the miners catch up, then it generally becomes a trickle down from the large gold miners to the mid tiers to the small tier miners, and continues those monies trickle down into the best juniors, and then when we're in a raging bull market, even the worst juniors, and there's certainly plenty of those.
You got to stay away from those babies. That's what's so valuable about your service and, you know, a few of the others. I mean, any help you can get to identify the good ones and stay away from the bad ones sure increases your potential. But I mean, before we get to that, I want to talk about your process and what the regular guy or gal can do to kind of imitate it and do their own homework. I do want to back up, though, to the commodities in general. Because, you know, you've seen the charts, I've seen the charts, commodities versus S&P. You know, people that run these cycles talk about there's some grand cycle low and all that kind of stuff. Even as we speak and record this on Wednesday, we're watching platinum finally move up, get above $1,000 for the first time in a couple of years. If it can hold, that'd be great. It's up 10% in a month. Are you sensing platinum, copper, you know, lead, zinc, the rest? Are you sensing, you know, with maybe the dollar turning lower, that we're starting a pretty good move in commodities in general?
Well, I think the dollar is, you know, it's been flat. It's been plus or minus 2 or 3% over the last year, and I think we're going to look at a weaker dollar going forward, and that's certainly good for commodities as a whole. But I would differentiate between the precious metals and the industrial metals, and the precious metals are gold, silver, and platinum. Palladium, although it trades like a precious metal, is an industrial metal, 95% used for industrial purposes. So I would kick it into the basket that include copper and zinc and lead and nickel as an industrial metal. And I think, other than the speculative exponential rise in palladium, which is a big anomaly right now, I would expect the industrial metals to do well as the trade snafu between the Chinese and the United States starts to work itself out. Today is supposedly the day that this phase one agreement is going to be signed. Looking at the copper price today at 282, it's up a penny or so. But once that trade deal is signed, I think the supply demand fundamentals for the base metal complex are quite compelling. in the short to midterm, and even for copper in the long term. But they've been held back because of the trade war, trade tariffs, whatever you want to call it. Once that's resolved, hopefully it's resolved, then I expect that complex to do quite well.
And I would imagine, Mickey, I mean, when I listen to you, I'm thinking, you know, for the generalist hedge fund manager, you know, or institutional manager or whatever, I mean, they don't necessarily differentiate. They just see the mining sector in general, right? So it is kind of a rising tide lifts all boats in some sense.
Well, certainly. And once again, it generally always starts with the big boys. It starts with the miners who are perceived to have the lowest risk, but not necessarily highest reward. That comes down in the junior sector. But, even the hedge funds are relatively cautious when it comes to playing. They generally play the metals, speculate in the metals. And if you look at the commercial traders right now, they're net long all these metals. So that kind of tells you right now where they see the metals complex going. You know, until December, the hedgies, as I like to call them, they stayed out of the market, or they were net short in copper. As starting in December, they've overwhelmingly gone net long. Now, a lot of this has to do with the perceived progress, news and rumor from the bush or on the street about some sort of settlement between the U.S. and the Chinese.
Yeah. All right. Here's the main crux of the issue today, Mickey. Let's go into phase two of this call. I mean, folks here know, I think that there's a great opportunity to make some fiat this year, just trading, owning precious metals and the shares in particular. But, you know, I think there's a lot of misinformation or just bad information out there. You got the banks and their sell side analysts. You never know what positions they may have, you know, and they're putting out research reports. Sites like Seeking Alpha, I think, are garbage because you get all these people on there that post their opinions, and they may have already built up a massive short position in something, and they're just simply trying to talk their book and talk something down. I don't think you can trust that information. So at the end of the day, I think the only information you can trust is that you compile and do on your own. You know, you get input from people like you who know what you're doing.
Right.
But an individual, if they're going to do this, really has to do it themselves. They've got to, I mean, then you only really have yourself to blame if you're wrong too. What I wanted to ask you was, how can a regular person, you know, it's managing their own account and all that kind of stuff. Let's just break it down, senior, junior, explorer. Just some tips. What should a regular person be looking for in a senior producer? What are the most important factors? But then down to a junior, and then down to how do you evaluate an exploration opportunity?
So with respect to any miner, you got to look at margin. What's their cost of production? All-in cost of production, not operating costs, not all-in sustaining costs, but all-in costs, including CapEx and sustaining capital, et cetera. And look at the margins. So try to pick the ones that have the highest margins. In other words, the highest net cash flow per ounce, per unit of metal produced, whether that's an ounce of gold or a pound of copper. So that's the first way to start that. And we have a metric we use called the adequacy ratio. And I published a piece along with Cypher Research about 4 years ago, or actually I think 5 years ago, and where we analyzed a bunch of major gold companies, and we developed this thing called the adequacy ratio, which is basically cash in versus cash out. Follow the money. And you want that above one. And for people interested, you can go out on my website the piece was called The Real Cost of Mining Gold, and it was published, if memory serves, in February of 2015 to get an idea of how you work through this adequacy ratio. So anyway, that's what you do with the producers, all the way from the big boys to the smallest miners. You want to make sure they got enough cash to meet their obligations, and if they're majors, to produce some dividends. If they're smaller companies, you want to make sure they have enough cash flow to pay for their development and exploration, to continue adding reserves as they deplete reserves. Mining is a depletion business, and then hopefully have some left over to give dividends to shareholders. With the juniors, it's a much different ball game. None of them have cash flow. Most of them never will. They raise money through equity. So you want to look at share structure, make sure the insiders own a significant amount of those shares so they have the best interest of all shareholders in mind. You want management to be technical, either geologists or engineers. You want them to have had success in the business and not a string of failures. Tight share structure, the right people with experience and positive experience. And then for me as a geologist, it's the project, flagship project. Does it make sense? Is it in a geopolitically safe jurisdiction? I have more and more moved to the Americas in my speculations, and more into the good old U.S. of A, because it is the safest geopolitical jurisdiction for mining in the world. Regarding the project, it's very difficult for people without a technical background to analyze that. So I would suggest you find some good newsletter writers who have good track records, and better off, and this is promoting my own business and book, if that newsletter writer is a geologist, then he's got a leg up on knowing what's good and bad and why they are. You know, we do have a fatal flaw sort of business where you're looking for fatal flaws to eliminate about 90%, 95% on a first pass basis of the 1,200 juniors. So do the math. I'm down to 50 companies that I'll even take a serious look at.
And on the exploration stuff, I mean, I know I often hear about how, you know, not all holes are the same, not all grades are the same, and that kind of thing. And so this is probably requires an answer that we could talk about all day. On the really small ones.
We have a bit of a time limit here. So.
Yeah, on the smaller ones, you know, on the exploration companies. If price really gets going, a lot of stuff will become economically viable and they'll all go up. But what's the one or two things that you're always looking for on the smaller ones?
Well, those four things that I just told you about.
Okay.
And as far as project goes, once again, geopolitically safe jurisdiction in a geological environment where there are mines or there's reasons and reasons to think they're going to be more mines. So places like Nevada, places like Alaska, Idaho, certain parts of Peru, Chile, certain parts of Mexico. So those are kind of the areas with mining cultures and the ability to permit and number one, the ability to find good deposits, and number two, the ability to permit them.
Well, all right, my friend. As we move toward the final stages here, again, as we've said, I mean, you can do this on your own, but it also you got to have trusted outside sources. You go to mercenarygeologist.com or goldgeologist.com, either one. It's a free deal. I mean, just give them your email address and you get this in your app. How often?
You have to give us a name, though, too.
Oh, you
can fake your name. But you got to give us a working email address.
Gotcha. Working. How often do you send stuff out, Mickey?
Once a week.
Okay.
You get a Sunday notice to subscribers, which points out everything I've done on my website and gives you access to the things that are restricted to subscribers only. And then whenever I post a newsletter, which I do about two a month on average, 24, 25 a year. But I may write 4 weeks in a row, 6 weeks in a row, and then I may not write for a month because I've got nothing to say. So I write when I've got something to say. So occasionally you'll get two things things a week from us. You also, for instance, I'm speaking on Sunday at the Cambridge House Conference here in Vancouver, and my subscribers will get a notice at noon today reminding them to come and attend that conference. And if you sign up under my banner, you get the conference for free. So we try to offer as much free stuff as we can. We restrict it to our email subscribers because that's the way we add subscribers. If you can't get my stock picks, then it probably means you need to sign up as a free email subscriber.
All right. So then, pun intended, how about a couple nuggets? You got just a couple of favorites you might share with everybody?
Absolutely. So I run a sponsor model, so realize that I have significant share positions in these companies, and they pay a sponsorship fee for my website. So the first one would be Ely Gold Royalties, a royalty company in Nevada, also has a producing royalty in Quebec. It has transitioned from a prospect generator to more of a royalty company. We started covering it in just about 2 years ago, in early February of 2018, at 9 cents. It closed yesterday somewhere around 42 cents. It's been as high as 47. We think it still has upside because it's being revalued now as a royalty company, and it still has half the market cap of its peers in that space. In copper space, I cover Trilogy Metals, a New York American listed company with arguably the two highest grade giant copper deposits undeveloped in safe geopolitical jurisdiction in the world, and that's Northwest Alaska. They have catalysts coming. We picked that stock at 65 cents in May of 2017. It hit a high of 314 last summer, then had massive short attacks, naked algorithmic short attacks, drove it down to $1.60. We bought back in then. It's now trading somewhere around the $2.30 to $2.50 range. It has catalysts coming, EIS for its road expected soon. And finally, a private company, Real Gold Resources, it will soon be public on the Toronto Venture Exchange. There's a private placement opportunity for my accredited subscribers, and that's available on the website.
Fantastic. Look, Mickey, you know I love you, baby. I just think it's great what you do. And again, I mean you're always very open about what you do and how you do it, and you're not, again, how can you not want to sign up for free information that's going, you know, as unbiased and objective as it can be, that'll help you profit in the months ahead, as long as we're right about which way this is all headed. So again, mercenarygeologist.com or goldgeologist.com, either address will take you to the same place. Mickey, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Craig, for the opportunity. And go Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, now you're talking my language, my friend.
I knew that. I'm a Bronco fan, but the Chiefs deserve it. And what a performance they put on last Sunday.
You know, and the thing is, all those years of watching Belichick get the Lamar Hunt trophy and just kind of toss it aside, they're going to go crazy to get the Lamar Hunt trophy in Kansas City. That's almost as big as winning the Super Bowl. So that's a big game coming up, no doubt about that.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope if memory serves, the last Super Bowl, or the only Super Bowl that Kansas City won, I know Lynn Dawson was a quarterback, and that was either in 1970 or 1971.
So a long time ago.
That's been 50 years, mate.
It has been. It has been. We might even get a replay of Super Bowl I in the 100th year of the NFL, because that was the Chiefs and the Packers. So
and
we'll
the
see.
Packers, I remember that. You know, I grew up in Missouri as a Cardinal fan, but, you know, if the Broncos don't make it, I'm going to root for the Chiefs every year.
So. Appreciate that. Well, all right, my friend, all the best, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great weekend.